Hi, and welcome to the Gandhi's Grim Creature Den podcast. The Gandhi's Grim are a group, a family actually, a family of storytellers, authors, creature creators, special effects artists, filmmakers, and some of us sing too. Again, welcome and please enjoy some homespun horror from the Gandhi's Grim. I am practical special effects makeup artist, creature designer and creator, and the narrator. I am H.M. Gandhi. In this episode of the Gandhi's Grim, we present the audio-only version of Satan's Cadaver, a short novel created and written by Alan Gandhi. Prologue.
First off, I would like to say, please excuse my voice. It's getting a little hard to talk since my vocal cords are rotting. I used to have a really nice girly voice before, I swear. With that said, I'll start my ending like this. Hello and goodbye. My name is Penny Goodfellow, and I am about to die. Wait, I mean die again. No, that's not it. Die for the last time? Okay, let's go back to the first part. It just sounds more dramatic. My name is Penny Goodfellow, and I am about to die. Last night, I was a normal teenage girl hanging out with her friends, and now, tonight, I am laying in an alley, looking at the lower part of my body and intestines on top of a dumpster about 30 feet away from me. You may think that being cut in half with my guts everywhere would be part of the reason that this will be my last day. Well, if you thought that, then you would be wrong. Dead wrong. Okay, maybe I'm being a little dramatic, but it's just a few more minutes until I'm dead, and I really want you to think my story is cool. Actually, I'm going to die by a friend of the family's hand. Uncle Al. That is what I called him growing up. Al is going to walk right up to me in a moment and shoot me in the head. Now don't be all judgmental and angry with Uncle Al. He is a good man. The problem is, I am a monster. Please don't get all worked up in a panic and think that monsters are coming to get you. After tonight, there won't be any more monsters. And the reason is, I am the last. Monster, that is.
Chapter 1. Always trust your gut.
Let's start at last night, when I was a normal teenage girl. It was just me and my dad. My mother passed away when I was around 5 years old, so my dad and Uncle Al pretty much raised me. I was just returning home from a Lady Goo Poo concert. When I first walked into our house, I knew something was wrong. First off, there was a draft. My dad never left his windows open. And second, my father didn't yell down his usual greeting.
Is that you, Penny? Are you alone?
He would always say that, no matter what. You see, my father would never let me invite friends over to the house unless he had met them first. I called out to my father, but there was no response. I could hear a rumbling from his study upstairs. As I ascended the staircase, I got a sick feeling in my gut and a sharp pain in the back of my neck. I remembered having that feeling once before, but couldn't put my finger on when or why. As I opened the door to his study, I saw something so awful I stopped dead in my tracks. My dad was lying on the ground, his torso shredded with blood and pieces of his flesh everywhere. There was a young girl who looked close to my age standing over him. It felt like a dream. Then the young girl turned and looked at me with a blood-soaked smile. Oh my God, I thought to myself. It's Piper.
Chapter 2. Should have listened to my pops, then my gut.
I had met Piper about 3 weeks prior. My father was out of town, and like any good 15-year-old girl, I threw a house party. Piper showed up while the party was in full swing. I heard a knock on the door, and when I answered, Piper was standing there crying. She introduced herself and said that her boyfriend was inside and that she needed to get him. Feeling bad for her, I invited Piper in. I remembered she did one lap around the party and left. By the time she reached the door, Piper wasn't crying anymore. She actually had the same grin on her face that she does now. Except for the whole my father's blood all over her face thing. And then it hit me. That unsettling feeling I had as I was coming up the stairs just now. It's the same feeling I had when Piper was in my house the first time. My trance was broken by the gurgling of my father choking on his own blood. Despite his kind demeanor, my father was a big, strong, intimidating man. I'd never seen my dad in a vulnerable position before. He always controlled every situation and interaction with anyone he came in contact with. Seeing him lying on his back, defeated by this little girl, choking on his own blood and tears, destroyed me inside. I cried out to him and ran to his side. As soon as my dad was in my arm's length, Piper punched me in the chest. I felt my ribs crack, then I was airborne. As I hit the wall on the other side of the room, blood exploded from my mouth. I fell paralyzed to the floor, unable to move or breathe. Blood pouring from my mouth and nose in a steady stream. All I could do was watch as Piper ripped my father apart, laughing through the whole thing. Soon my father was unrecognizable, just a pile of blood, guts, and bone. God, how I hated her. All I wanted to do was jam my fist down her throat and rip out her heart. My vision started to blur, and I knew I was dying. Then Piper looked at me and picked up something. As she made her way toward me, I was able to make out what it was. My father's head. Piper held it up to my face and said, "Look at Daddy." She dropped his head in my lap, then walked out the door. I heard her snicker, "Little stupid bitch," just before the lights went out. That was my first death. And let me tell you, it was a horrible way to die.
Chapter 3, Dead Awakening.
Waking up from death or being reanimated was very unsettling. My first thought was, I'm alive. And then I realized I wasn't breathing. So that freaked me out. I tried to reach for my throat, but my arms were strapped down. I wanted to scream for help, but all that came out was a quiet, low-toned slur. At that point, I totally lost it. I started to flail and writhe about, trying to free myself from my restraints. Not a moment later, two men burst into the room. One grabbed my head and yanked it back as the other jammed a ball gag into my mouth.
"Please, Penny, calm down," one of the men pleaded.
I knew something was wrong. This wasn't like any hospital I'd ever seen before. The room was very sterile looking with all the medical equipment inside, but the walls were painted black. The men were dressed in black gowns and pointy black hats, kind of like Ku Klux Klan members, except for the open face area and the lack of white color.
One of the men yelled, "Hurry, get him in here now."
At that moment, I was totally lost. All I knew was I was going to fight whatever these people were going to do to me. And then I saw him. It was Uncle Al. He yelled at one of the men,
"Get that thing out of her mouth now."
"But sir," one of the men nervously replied. Al raised his powerful voice even more and roared,
"Now."
The man held my head down again while his partner carefully removed the ball gag.
"Leave us,"
Uncle Al ordered, and the men immediately left the room.
"Hey, sweetie,"
Uncle Al said in a shaky voice, his eyes glazed over.
"I have a lot to tell you, and we don't have much time."
"Is this real? Is my father dead?" I asked in a low, unfamiliar voice. The glaze in Uncle Al's eyes turned to tears.
"Yes, sweetie, this is real, and Bill is gone. I am sorry. I'm going to start explaining things to you. You are going to find it hard to believe, but trust me, it's all true. First off, I am not your uncle. I was hired to watch over your family."
Chapter 4, Uncle Al.
I always knew he wasn't biologically related to me. My father and I were white, and Uncle Al was a very dark black man. My dad told me that Al was adopted. I never knew my grandparents because they died before I was born, so I never questioned what I was told. Uncle Al was at every birthday. He would actually get me the best presents. He came to every school play. When my dad would have to go out of town for work, Uncle Al would watch me. And that happened pretty often because my dad worked a lot. He was not just my uncle. He was like a second dad. Hell, he was the only family I had besides my dad. Because I was so close to him and could see the sorrowful look in his eyes, I knew he was telling me the truth. "Why were you hired to watch over us?" I asked.
"You see, Penny, your family is very special. About 800 years ago, a child named Villain was blessed, or cursed, to exterminate a certain race. But it wasn't his burden to bear alone. It was a burden of his bloodline. And your father and you were the last of that bloodline. My job was to protect you and assist your family in fulfilling your destiny of abolishing this particular race."
Al was right. I didn't believe it, but I didn't want him to stop. I needed a distraction from thinking about what had happened to my father.
"No man or woman in history has ever been able to kill one of these people until Villain. It took generations of your family to almost wipe this race off the earth. Your father was one of the best exterminators. He had almost as many kills as Villain himself."
"Stop!" I tried to yell. "This is crazy! My father is not a killer, and he would never take part in exterminating a race?"
"Penny, please, just listen. I know this is hard. Your father killed vampires, and he was good at it too. That's why he would be gone for weeks at a time. Bill killed the last Ark vampire. There was only one left, a fairly new monster that wasn't mature enough to make others. None of this should have happened. We have no idea how such a weak vampire could have gotten close enough to your father to kill him."
Chapter 5. Yep, monsters are real.
I must be dreaming, I thought to myself. When am I going to wake up from this nightmare? Vampires? I asked.
"Yes, vampires. There are, or should I say were, real monsters in the world. Most stories you hear are based on some kind of truth. For the last 1,000 years, it has been the job of our organization to rid the world of all man-hunting creatures. Werewolves, fishmen, and even zombies once existed. We successfully executed our job and have wiped out all monsters from the earth, except vampires. Only a descendant of Villain could rid the world of them. Vampires are a demonic force and can only be destroyed by spiritual warfare. All of our technology and weapons, and trust me, we have tried, cannot override what has been deemed destiny from our scripture. This is why we brought you back."
"Wait, what do you mean, brought me back? Did I die?" I asked, completely confused.
"I'm sorry, Penny, but yes, you did die. And technically, you are still dead. We reanimated you with a neurochemical developed by Nazi scientists during World War II. Tribalex 779-06-2349-2218. Or you could call it zombie serum. Have you noticed that you haven't been breathing this whole time?"
And to answer that, no. I kind of forgot about the not breathing thing after Uncle Al told me that my dad destroyed vampires. Al continued.
"Bill's body was too damaged to reanimate, so our last hope was you. We are not sure if this is even going to work. It was the only thing we could think of to do because time was running short. The longer you were dead would mean the less control over yourself you would have after being reanimated. You are the last of the Villain bloodline. If you don't kill the last vampire, they will begin to spread again and our prophecies will not become true."
"Are you saying I'm a zombie?"
"Yes, Penny, I am. And I am sorry."
Now you would think I would freak out and be like, "No, it isn't true." Like Luke in the Strikes Back movie. But by the time I asked the question, I already kind of knew the answer. Besides the no breathing thing, I couldn't tell I didn't have a heartbeat. Until I didn't have one. You can never really feel the fluids rushing through until they kind of stop.
"You have about 8 hours before you will lose control of your body and become a flesh-eating ghoul. Sorry about being so blunt, honey, but we must act quickly.
The girl that killed you and your father is the last vampire, which you probably figured out. Your father and I thought this would be an easy kill for him because she was so young and her abilities were not fully developed. But there must be something more to her, something special. You see, not even a 100-year-old, fully matured vampire could have tricked your father into inviting them into your house. Especially since one of the gifts of the descendants of Villain is a physical warning sign when a vampire is present, such as a headache or a sharp pain in the neck.
As soon as he said that, I knew that this was entirely my fault. About a year ago, my best friend and I even watched a foreign film about not letting vampires into your house, because once they are in, they can freely come and go as they please. There was nothing special about this vampire. It was just as Piper said right before I died the first time. I was a stupid bitch. And I got myself and my father killed. If I'd only known about all of this, I would never have let her in. I was so ashamed that I couldn't tell Uncle Al what I had done. Why didn't any of you tell me about this? I asked my uncle.
I wanted to tell you, Penny, but your father was determined that you grew up normal. Your dad believed he would be able to wipe out the vampire race and free your family from the gift. Or, in your father's eyes, the curse of Villain. He hated his lot in life, and he wanted better for you. Your grandparents and mother all fell at the hands of vampires. You see, both sides are trying to exterminate each other. It's a war that's gone on for hundreds of years, and it all ends tonight, one way or another.
So what happens to me after I kill this vampire? Uncle Al looked down at the ground. I could tell he did not want to answer the question.
You will be exterminated. Most likely, a headshot. It's the most merciful way of killing your kind.
By your kind, you mean zombie? I asked.
Yes, Penny. You have to understand. We must destroy all unnatural creatures for the final fulfillment of our organization's purpose. Our organization is called the Trinity of Six, or more commercially, 666. Our duty is to clear the way for the Antichrist to come. If there are any unnatural beasts on this planet, the Antichrist won't be able to begin his reign on Earth successfully. Just one outbreak of any kind of monster could stir the masses to begin a new revival of God. You see, when man can see and touch evil, he turns to God out of fear, and that could put off the coming of the Fallen One. That could be for another 1,000 years. That must not be allowed to happen at any cost.
Are you saying that my family destroys vampires for the devil? I asked.
It's a little more complicated than that, but ultimately, yes. Our organization is funded from many sects of the government and religious groups, even the Catholic Church. It's not only Satan who needs the fulfillment of this prophecy. This will also validate the word of God. I was sent by the Catholic Church to work for the organization and aid in the coming of the Antichrist. I am actually a Catholic priest, sent by God to work for Satan. I know this must be confusing. You see, 666 is not a number that will be branded on the masses in allegiance with the devil. 666 stands for the number of acts that our organization must accomplish to bring on the last days. And assisting your family in the extinction of vampires is our 666th act.
I didn't care who I was working for. God, the devil, the Church of Barney. All that mattered to me was that I would get a chance to kill the bitch who murdered my dad. Is that why all the men that restrained me look like goth clansmen and the room looks like the Batcave? I asked. Al began to laugh. Then his laughter turned to sobbing as he looked at me with the saddest eyes I had ever seen.
I know I am not your real uncle, but Penny, I love you so much. You will always be my little tubby bear.
Then I lost it. I started crying, except my eyes could not produce tears. It was more like a slow-motion seizure, with an awful moan and slobber spewing from my mouth. I wanted him to come over to me and hold me and sing to me like he did when I was a little girl. I was always scared at night, but Uncle Al knew how to calm me down and put me to sleep. He would say, "Don't worry, my little tubby bear." And then he would sing, "Twinkle, twinkle, little star." I would never make it to the end of the song. I always fell asleep before he would finish.
Chapter 6, Crash Course, Monster Fights 101.
Al cleared his throat.
Penny, I'm going to take off your restraints now. No matter what urges you feel, please do not bite me or anyone else. You see, Penny...
I get it, Al, I interrupted. I've seen the movies. I could start a zombie plague and end the world. But I do have one question. Am I one of the new kinds of fast zombies that run, or one of the old school zombies that stumbles around all slowly and shit?
You are both kinds. The longer you are dead, the slower and less in control of your body you will be.
I could live with that answer. I always liked the slow ones better anyway. They just seemed creepier. But a slow zombie would not have a chance against a vampire. A young, attractive man entered the room and asked Al to follow him out. I could hear the man ask how the cadaver was doing as they left the room. Al snapped at him.
Please, sir. Her name is Penny.
Then they let the door slam behind them. It seemed like they were gone forever, so I began to look myself over. My arms were so pale I could see black veins under my skin. My chest was caved in from where Piper had punched me. And the most upsetting thing I noticed about my newfound condition was that when she hit me, my left breast must have ruptured. I know I'm a flesh-eating zombie, but I'm still a girl.
Our specialist is going to come in and give you a crash course in vampire killing,
Al said as he re-entered the room. Al, before you let him in, I have a favor to ask of you.
What is it, Penny? Anything.
I knew Al wasn't going to like my question, but I asked anyway. When the time comes, can you be the one to put me down? Please, Al. I don't want to die without you there, and I know you will make it as humane as possible. Al drew me in for one of his bear hugs. It felt so good to be held. I needed that more than anything. Al answered,
Of course, Penny. Anything you want.
We held each other for what felt like an eternity. I never wanted to let him go. So, after I finished eating my Uncle Al's brains, ha! Just kidding. It was actually a very sweet moment. And zombies don't eat brains. Skulls are hard, and teeth, especially zombie teeth, can't hold up to all that skull cracking. I'm not saying that if a person's brains were laying on the ground, a zombie wouldn't eat it. Okay, back to my story. The crash course in vampire killing was very discouraging. Vampires are stronger and faster than humans. So as you can imagine, it will only be worse for a zombie whose body is rapidly shutting down. Not to mention my time constraints. I won't be able to wait till morning when Piper will be at her most vulnerable to attack. The only real factor in my favor was that I had dead man's blood. And as you know, if you are into vampires, dead man's blood will make them terribly sick if it doesn't kill them. Oh, and there's that whole "it has been written" thing about my bloodline wiping vampires off the face of the earth. Al informed me that they located Piper, and their best men were tracking her at that moment. Rage shot through me as I jumped to my feet. Let's go, I yelled, and started heading for the door. Al grabbed me.
Hold on, Penny. You must understand, we can't help you when you see Piper again. If we try to intervene in any way during the confrontation, you will surely lose the battle. Any time we have tried to help one of your kin in a battle with a vampire, the outcome has never been desirable. There is one thing you've got that Piper doesn't.
And what's that, Al? I interrupted.
You know there is no tomorrow. Where Piper will be fighting with self-preservation in mind, you are truly free to do whatever it takes to win.
The car ride to Piper's location seemed too short. I was ready to kick her ass, but I knew that win or lose, the sooner I fought her, the sooner I would die. The only physical weapon I had was a small axe with the handle shaved down into a spike. No holy water or crosses, because it would only repel Piper from me, and I would have to get real close to her in order to pull this off. We pulled into the parking lot of an abandoned burger joint. Al pointed across the street to a very dark alleyway.
Our field agents have informed us that Piper is in that alley over there, harassing a homeless man. She likes to play with her food before she eats it.
By that time, my whole body ached and my muscles were starting to tighten and feel stiff.
Once you get out of the car, Penny, eat this. It should help you feel better.
Al handed me a sandwich bag filled with God knows what. It looked like extra chunky oatmeal with raw meat chunks in it. What is this? I asked Al. Al wouldn't even look at the bag when he said,
Sweetie, you don't want to know.
It's now or never, I thought, and I stepped out of the car. I looked back at Al and told him, I love you, Uncle Al.
You too, Tubby Bear,
he said. And then he shut the door. I saw my reflection for the first time since I died in the car's tinted windows. I looked like hell. My eyes had almost lost all their color, and my face was so pale with what looked like black spider webs all over it. I did not recognize that girl, and I didn't want to see her anymore. So I turned and started walking away from the car.
Chapter 7. Get ready to rumble!
I opened the bag filled with my last meal. I put my finger in it and took a little taste. I remember wondering, how in the hell am I going to eat all of this? It was the most disgusting thing I had ever tasted. But by the time I was done with that thought, I found myself on the ground pouring the last drops into my mouth. It was strange. I could not remember eating it. I looked back, embarrassed, but the car was gone. I hoped that Al hadn't seen me. All I knew was, my body felt great. Okay, this is it, I thought. The last monsters on Earth in a fight to the death. It made me think of the old Universal Movies advertisements.
Zombie versus vampire in an epic battle for the future of mankind. Witness the horror. Try not to scream as you follow a young girl's transformation into a flesh-eating zombie by a mad organization of Satan worshippers. Can she avenge her father's murder and destroy the last blood-sucking vampire on Earth? Or will her actions bring on the coming of the Antichrist? Find out in this all-new terrifying film, Satan's Cadaver.
The thought of that made me giggle inside. Thinking about my situation as if it were a movie made it a little bit more bearable. I picked up my axe, wiped the slop off my face, and began walking towards the alley. When I turned the corner, I saw Piper standing over this homeless man. It brought me back to when I saw her standing over my father. She had not begun to feed on him yet. This time won't be like the last, I told myself. Piper! I called out to her. Oh my God, it's you, the bitch that got her daddy killed, Piper exclaimed. You are a lot tougher than I expected. The last time I saw you, your face was watering your dad's severed head. I guess there is something to the villain bloodline thing. Don't worry. This time, I'll leave you in pieces, like your dad. I could tell she was trying to piss me off, and it worked. I raised the axe in the air and charged her. When I brought the axe down to her neck, she caught my arm with one hand and snapped my wrist. Then she grabbed the axe and tossed it across the alley. I threw a left hook and caught her across the jaw. Nothing. Piper just smiled at me. She grabbed my head and pulled it to the side, exposing my neck. I'm going to enjoy sucking you dry. Okay, I know that sounds a little too much like something an evil vampire from a B-rated movie would say, but no joke, the bitch said it. I know, fuck her, right? Piper dug her fangs deep into my neck and began to feed. I could feel the fluids inside my chest and head flowing towards the wound, when all of a sudden, Piper stopped.
Chapter 8. Choke on him.
Piper grabbed her throat, choking on my blood, and fell to the ground, throwing up. Her eyes turned pitch black, and she let out a blood-curdling scream. I began stomping on her stomach and yelled, Dead man's blood, you stupid bitch! Piper swung at my leg, taking my foot clean off. As it flew across the alley, I fell to the ground. Surprisingly, I could feel the release of my foot as it came off, but there wasn't much pain. I pulled myself on top of Piper and started punching her in the face repeatedly. God, how I hated her. My right hand was just flapping around with my broken wrist, and I could feel the bones in my left hand breaking from the impact of the blows. Piper reached into my chest, grabbed my rib cage, and flung me across the alley, sending me about 20 feet away from her. Still, I knew I had to keep going. I was not going to let her live. I pulled myself up and started hopping on one leg back over to Piper. I realized she had a couple of my ribs in her hand. Being a zombie isn't ideal, but it does have its perks. No matter what she does to me, I can keep going. Piper realized I was still coming and began to crawl away, but every few feet she would collapse again in her own vomit. Now, I don't know if all vampires wear revealing sexy clothing, because this is the only one I have ever seen, but Piper began to explode with warm fluids from both ends. If she knew her night was going to be like this, I bet she wouldn't have worn a miniskirt. I looked over and I saw that the homeless man had not left the alley. He was still lying on the ground, watching all of this with his jaw just hanging open. I wonder how it must have looked, with a girl hopping on one leg and chasing another girl who looked like a double-sided sprinkler. Piper started to scale the side of the building. That really fueled my hate for vampires. They were like the Superman of monsters. I was just waiting for her to turn around and light me on fire with her heat vision. Ridiculous. She was too far up the wall for me to get to her, just about a foot out of arm's reach. Piper stopped to release her body fluids again. And yes, I was standing under her when it happened. And no, I will not explain the details. Let's just say I really hate this girl. Piper wasn't going anywhere fast. I saw a dumpster that could get me within reach of a fire escape ladder. It was not an easy feat. Getting on top of the dumpster and climbing the ladder with a missing foot and a useless hand was grueling work. Piper was still slowly scaling the wall. I had to make my move at that moment or I would have missed my opportunity to end this. I pushed off the ladder with all my strength. My aim was true. I landed on her back with my good arm around her neck. The shock of me landing on Piper's back sent her into a frenzy. She began to climb the building at an accelerated rate while trying to reach behind and pull me off. Piper grabbed my right butt cheek and she dug in good. She was able to penetrate through my jeans and meat and got a firm hold of the bone. She let out a loud scream and pulled with all her might. This time, I did feel pain as she ripped the lower half of my body away from itself. As I looked down, I could see my leg and intestines fall to the ground below. It was weird to think all these guts could fit into my small body. Uncle Al's words came rushing into my brain. No matter what, I was going to die tonight. I wouldn't be winning any beauty contests after this. The only way I would be able to destroy Piper was to destroy myself. The only true weapon I had was what was left of my blood. I bit down on my bottom lip and completely ripped it off, then did the same to my top lip. I could see a huge vein throbbing in Piper's neck. That would be the best place to transfer my blood to her. I chomped down on Piper's neck, taking a huge chunk of flesh out. I was planning on spitting it out, but the next thing I knew, I was swallowing it. I stuck my bloody face into the wound and began to chew my tongue and the sides of my mouth to a bloody pulp. Then I pulled as much of my blood as I could on the shredded side of my cheeks and licked and pressed my dead blood deep inside her neck. I could see black veins begin to spiderweb from the wound. Piper let go of the wall and we both fell to the ground. Piper landed on top of me. She was not really moving much, just twitching a bit. I pushed Piper off of me and climbed on top of her. If I hadn't hated that bitch so much, I would have felt sorry for her. She just laid there with tears pouring from her eyes, looking at me. She had no idea what had just happened. All she knew was, she was defeated. I did not want to take a chance and leave her there while I recovered my axe. So I decided to bite off my crippled hand and use the bone from my forearm as a stake. Just so you know, a stake through the heart doesn't really kill a vampire. It just paralyzes them for as long as a stake is in their heart. I punched at Piper's chest with my newly formed weapon until I was able to break through her rib cage and penetrate her heart. There was a lot of blood, and then Piper stopped twitching. The only way I knew she was still alive was that her eyes were still blinking and focused on my face. This is it, I thought. I was going to finish her off when it hit me. This was a big moment. I was going to kill the last vampire on Earth, avenge my father, and bring on the coming of the Antichrist. I had to say something cool, like in the movies, you know? Like what the hero would say just before he offs the bad guy. So I went for it. I looked Piper in the eye and said, "This is for my dad. Zombie beats vampire, bitch." Now, you might think that was cool, but if he heard it, it might not have impressed you so much. With half of my face gone, my tongue shredded, and my already low moaning muffled voice, it sounded kind of pathetic. But it's the thought that counts, right? I started eating Piper's neck. After I was able to remove her head from her body, I thought, why stop there? She didn't taste really that good. Not as good as Uncle Al's stuff he gave me in that zipper bag, but it was still satisfying. By the time I finished Piper's face, I realized the homeless man was still sitting in the alley, watching. I yelled at him, "Run, or I'm going to eat you next." Which wasn't true. I was stuffed. But I knew when Uncle Al showed up, he would probably have to kill this man to clean up the mess. And I didn't want to make this night any worse than it already will be for my uncle.
Chapter 9, Destiny Schmestiny.
And that brings us back to the present. And now with my body all over the place, it's hard for me to accept the last 24 hours. Even though I'm a zombie, I'm still a 15-year-old girl that wants her daddy. I guess it's cool that I fulfilled my family's destiny and finished my father's work. But really, I don't care about any of that. This just sucks. I hate how my life is ending. Okay, it's time. Uncle Al is here. His hand is shaking as he lifts the gun up and points it at my head.
Hey, Tubby Bear. Are you ready?
Huh. I think to myself, am I ready? No, I'm not. I've never been on a date. I want to kiss a boy. Hell, I don't want to die a virgin. I want to get married and watch the father of my child play with him or her at the park where I used to play as a kid. I want to be a successful author. I want to travel across country on a motorcycle with my best friend Kim. I want to learn how to play guitar and start a band. Fuck! I want to live a full life and be normal. No, I'm not ready. As I look at Uncle Al holding the gun and see the tears streaming down his face, I give him my answer. It's okay, Al. I'm ready. Uncle Al begins to sing.
Twinkle, twinkle, little star.
This time, I'm going to finish it. Twinkle, twinkle, little star, how I wonder what you...
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Gandhi's Grim Creature Den podcast featuring Alan Gandhi's Satan's Cadaver. I would like to thank Brendan McKagan for his instrumental interludes. You can find more of his awesome metal mixes at www.soundcloud.com/bxmmusic. If you would like to check out more works of the very talented author, photographer, and comic book artist Alan Gandhi, you can find said masterpieces at amazon.com.
hard copies, and digital downloads available. To see some real homespun B-horror style special effects and creature creations from me, H.M. Gandy, please visit gandysgrimeffects.com and transfixedeffects.wix.com/transfixedeffects. Thank you again for listening, and hope you enjoyed this audio version only of Satan's Cadaver. I am H.M. Gandy signing off. Take care and die slow.